You're listening to Emily, a novel in the Never Let the Right One Go duology, as read by the author, Teal McClanahan III. For more information, please visit modernevil.com. Chapter 1. Tonight I learned that Justin lost his final appeal and is scheduled to be executed on my 16th birthday, next week. If the doctor's prognosis for me is right, he'll live longer than I do. I've decided to try to write everything down, to leave a record of what I've been through in the last few months, in the hope that, someday, something more might be done. We did what we could. We fought for what was right. But it wasn't enough, and we paid the price. We're all paying the price. If you're reading this, and vampires are still domesticated, and humans are still enslaved to the blood centers, you're paying too. Excerpted from the personal account of Emily, dictated in January 2018. Lying on what she knew would be her deathbed, Emily began trying to figure out how she had arrived so suddenly at the end of her life, by documenting her recollections of it in her online journal. Her parents had always encouraged her to examine the facts of a situation, to reason from evidence, and to document everything carefully. As Emily thought back to try to recall how it had all begun, she wondered whether the fickle whims of the heart could ever be so well documented that the last months of her life would make sense. She knew it had all started the first time she had seen Nicholas. Before that day, Emily hadn't even realized how bad the world had become. She had been blissful in her ignorance. Then Nicholas had opened her eyes to a cause she would end up dying for. That fine, sunny day, Emily had been out shopping with her friends, strolling among the boutique shops downtown, enjoying summer break the best way she knew how. When she came around a corner and saw Nicholas for the first time, his eyes shining bright and fierce with passion as he stood above a small gathering of people, exhorting them about the dangers of collaborating with vampires, Emily felt a jolt of electricity which seemed to shoot right out of his eyes into hers, then straight down her spine, sending tingles all over her body. Her heart pounded in her chest, her breath drew in, and Emily suddenly believed in love at first sight. "Are you coming, Emily?" asked her friend Madison. Emily had stopped in her tracks at the sight of him, and her friends had continued on without her, nearly failing to notice she'd trailed behind. Emily motioned with her hand and muttered something that didn't quite sound like, "I'll catch up," but couldn't take her eyes off Nicholas. She approached where he was speaking and began to actually listen to what he had to say. "They are our natural predators. We call their speed and strength and tenacity supernatural, but it is not that. Vampires were designed by nature to be superior to us in every way. They were designed by evolution to predate humanity, to overpower us, to bend us to their will, to consume our vital fluids, to suck the very life out of us. Humankind likes to think of itself as living at the top of the food chain, and until very recently, the true top of the food chain was well served by maintaining that illusion. Vampires are a hunter so cunning that for thousands of years humanity didn't even believe they existed. They killed us, they ate us, and they convinced us they were only a bad dream." Nicholas's eyes moved among the gathering crowd, making contact with every pair of eyes on his, and every time Emily felt him looking at her, she felt his eyes pierce straight to the core of her, and she felt herself melt a little more. "Imagine a wolf so cunning it can live among the sheep unnoticed. Unnoticed by the sheep, unnoticed by the shepherd, even the loss of life going unnoticed in the final tally. Imagine a serpent so sly it is born in the same nest as the doves it will feast upon. Treated with love by the dove, the serpent becomes sibling to its supper. Imagine the vampire, hidden among us since time immemorial. And imagine the perfect hunter, the perfect predator, the unstoppable force whose existence revolves around stopping ours." As Nicholas spoke, Emily began to be able to become aware of features beyond his beautiful eyes, though not far. She noticed the strong line of his jaw, tense with fervor and alive with motion. She noticed the high cheekbones, the thick mane of dark hair surrounding the top of his face, and the way his nostrils flared and his eyebrows furrowed with each wave of intensity across his features. "Yet here we are, pretending that it is within humanity to bend the vampire to its will, pretending we can stop the unstoppable force of violence and death and cunning that is the vampire. We extort their blood, we mutilate their bodies, we exploit their strength and speed, and we steal all that is natural to them. No longer do vampires hunt humans. No longer do they kill. No longer are they allowed to rule the herd of humanity from behind the scenes, taking what they want and leaving us hurt or dead and wondering what went wrong. Emily gradually found her feet carrying her closer to Nicholas, bumping past a couple dozen people gathered in the square, and soon there was nothing between her and the sudden object of her affections but air and a lack of introductions. "This is a grave injustice we deign to impose upon those clearly our superior in every way. This is a gross reversal, and it speaks as badly of humanity for its imposition as it does of the few vampires who force the rest to accept this twisted version of reality. We have enslaved vampires with the ready availability of our blood. We have turned them away from their nature by playing to its weakness, by giving freely in abundance what they were made to fight and hunt and scheme and connive to achieve for most of their existence, turning them into little more than addicts beholden to humanity as drug dealer. Truly, humanity has made all vampires suffer a great indignity by putting them in this position. Truly, they have been forced into submission, into a form of slavery to humanity, rather than to be allowed to live and survive on their own terms, and according to their own natures." People came and went from the small group around Emily as they got the gist of what Nicholas was saying, but Emily was falling deeper in love with him and hardly noticed that the world had continued in the periphery of his existence. She had never given much thought to the plight of the vampire before and was still too young to have begun making blood donations, but every word from Nicholas's lips sounded golden as it reached her ears. Emily found herself feeling she was part of the problem, one of the living who unjustly enslaved the vampires with her blood. "Worse than the enslavement of the master hunter to its prey is our own enslavement to the supernatural shortcuts of the vampire. A few short years ago, humanity took responsibility for solving its own problems. Human doctors treated injury and disease with techniques and technologies and traditions of human design. Human engineers designed great machines to accomplish amazing feats of construction and world-shaping. Humans directed their own economies, made peace or war according to their own negotiations, and governed themselves. If not well, then at least democratically. Now all doctors seem to know how to do is pour a little vampire blood on every wound. We hire vampires to snap together vampire-designed buildings and cities. We vote vampires into office to allow vampires to police the world and disband human militaries. In less time than I've been alive, humanity has gone from master of its own destiny to a slave of the superhuman mind and body." Emily took note of Nicholas's body. He was standing on a small platform not much bigger than a soapbox, but she knew he must be tall. His shoulders felt broad as her eyes caressed them. His arms and legs bulged with the musculature of someone who did real work. His tight pants left nothing to Emily's imagination but how she would get Nicholas out of them at the first opportunity. "We have become addicted to the quick fix. Humanity has enslaved itself to the monster in exchange for a few conveniences. It's like our entire species has developed attention deficit disorder. We're no longer content to let our bodies heal themselves. We can't be bothered to give up so much time. It's gotten out of hand. We've completely coddled ourselves. What began with using vampire-enhanced healthcare to take months or years off people's recovery time while restoring them to health we hadn't figured out yet how to rebuild on our own, is now an abomination against our own bodies. Johnson & Johnson have announced they're discontinuing the entire Band-Aid brand because we've all stopped waiting for even scrapes and bruises to heal. Instead, we rub a salve on and watch them fade away in seconds. I recently heard that consumers were demanding something even faster than V-Cell, as though mere seconds were too long to wait for minor injuries to be scarlessly healed." Emily wondered whether, in his vehement rejection of enslavement to supernatural shortcuts, Nicholas's body was covered in scars. She imagined being able to explore every inch of his body, turning it into a roadmap to the events of his past in a way she suddenly realized other men's bodies no longer would be. "We give over control of our corporations because our attention spans are too short to be able to plan beyond the next fiscal quarter, and in return we've been allowed to narrow our view of the future even further. How many of you have plans for the future 3 months from now? What about next month? Humanity has become blinkered into losing track of its own future. We've allowed ourselves to become addicted to being able to live in the moment, confident that someone else is taking care of the long view. And where we'll end up if we stay this course is not ours to say. Not anymore. Humanity's face is turned down, the changing world out of sight, out of mind, and out of our own control. We become passengers where we should be drivers. We're distracted by digital wonders and no longer tempered by hard work or suffering. What does it even mean to be human any longer? We pay our blood tax, and in return we get nothing more than bread and circuses. High-speed, high-definition, mass-produced bread and circuses. Emily realized her own life had no meaning, that she had no plans of her own for the future, nothing beyond the day of shopping with her friends and a newfound desire to somehow see Nicholas again. The only event on her calendar was school starting again, but even that schedule had been part of someone else's plans for her. Her government, keeping track of her future, so she could spend her time thinking about what to wear and who to date. Emily wondered what other plans the vampires had for her future. If you can't stand to see a superior creature hobbled and humbled and beholden to what amounts to little more than zookeepers or drug dealers denying vampires the ability to follow their very natures, please come to our meeting Thursday night and find out how you can help liberate the vampires. If you're concerned about your own future, if you want to be able to make decisions for your own life, set your own destiny, and have the chance to free yourself from the yoke of slavery that humanity has thrust upon your shoulders, I implore you to join us Thursday night. Find out what you can do about the situation and what it may mean for the future if you don't act now. We'll be at the Ravenbrook Community Center after sunset Thursday. Be there, or know you've chosen a life of slavery for yourself and for every other person on Earth. Nicholas stepped off his small, portable platform and began handing out flyers for the meeting. Emily hadn't even noticed the two other young men who had been handing out flyers to anyone who came within shouting distance of Nicholas. She'd been too absorbed with falling for Nicholas himself. When he turned to Emily to hand her a flyer, she hardly remembered how to speak. The words caught in her throat, and she almost feared she'd lose her chance to make a good first impression. Nicholas took her hand in his, giving it a firm shake, and said, "I'm Nicholas. I saw you in the crowd. You look like you really got what I was saying." "Emily," was all she could manage to squeeze out, her mind focused on the feeling of his hand on hers, their first contact. "I hope to see you Thursday night, Emily. It's people like you who are the key to making a difference. People who really understand our cause. People who are key influencers of their social networks. You look like you're an influencer, Emily. Would you describe yourself as an influencer?" Nicholas still held Emily's hand in his, and all she could do was nod and melt a little more inside. "That's good, Emily. Will I be seeing you again? I'd really like to see you Thursday night." Emily managed another nod, then discovered Nicholas's hand in hers had been replaced by a flyer, and he had moved on to speak to someone else in the crowd. She stood there, staring at the flyer, trying to make sense of the words while her head was swimming, but after several minutes she hadn't got anything from it but what Nicholas had said to her. "I'd really like to see you Thursday night," and the feeling of his eyes meeting hers, his hand on hers, and the dream of feeling more. When the crowd had dispersed, everyone going back to their shopping or errands, Nicholas and the other two spoke briefly, spent a little while gathering discarded flyers from the ground, and Nicholas returned to the small platform, beginning his speech over from the beginning. Emily stood there, listening to him speaking for a while, rapt. Around the time he began repeating himself, her friends came up to her, having finally noticed she'd fallen behind without catching up, and broke the spell Nicholas had put on her. As she rejoined her friends, Emily heard his voice fading into the distance. "Vampires were designed by nature to be superior to us in every way. They were designed by evolution to predate humanity, to overpower us, to bend us to their will, to consume our vital fluids, to suck the very life out of us." Emily couldn't wait to see him again, to hear his voice again, to feel his skin on hers. She couldn't concentrate on her shopping at all anymore. Thanks for listening to this episode of Emily, a novel in the Never Let the Right One Go duology, written and read by Teal McClenahan III. The music is used by permission from the composer Zakuro. This presentation is available under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 license from Modern Evil Press. For more information, or to order the ebook or the limited edition hardcover version of Never Let the Right One Go, please visit modernevil.com.